Aleph. I want to do again the last thing we saw. We rushed through the kind of Torah this time, and it really warrants a little more attention. So let's start again from Yud Zayin Amud Aleph 2-4. Sixth wide line, the sixth wide line, the first set of wide lines, yeah? Elokai Netzar, or actually one line up. The fifth wide line, Mar Brei de Ravina, okay? Speak up if you don't have it. Not yet? Alright? Not yet?
Mar Brei de Ravina, okay.
Alright, everybody okay? Okay. Mar Brei de Ravina, ki have a Messiah, let's say, when he would finish davening, Omar Hochi, he would say as follows. Maybe when he finished Menesre, he would say as follows. This, we've already gone through this and translated it in a basic way. This is the Tefillah of Elokai Netzar that we say, we emulate his practice and indeed say at the end of our Menesre. Now, we just saw a whole series of personal tefillahs that many of the different Amoraim recited. Why did we specifically pick this one? We saw a lot of very interesting tefillahs. Why did we specifically pick this one? I'm already moving on to this explanation level because translation we already did. We'll move on, go through it again, but with more elaboration. So Beis Yosef just kind of says in a cryptic way, Klal Yisrael chose this one. But there's a sefer called Charedim that was written by a contemporary of the Beis Yosef, of the Shulchan Aruch. It was Rabbi Elazar Askari. It was a very, very great person. Just anybody living in Tzfat at that time was overshadowed by some big personalities. We're talking about a period in Tzfat when you had the Beis Yosef and the Arizal and the Alshich and the Ramak and many other big personalities all living there at the same time. So you could have very, very great people who went almost unnoticed. But the truth is that the Charedim was also very well noticed. He says that Elokai Netzar, the reason it was chosen was because this really contains captures the most fundamental things to daven for in a nutshell. And this is something that's relevant to everybody. It's not an issue of perspective, meaning we saw different Amoraim with their personal positions, etc. This is something that's relevant to everybody and encapsulates some of the most fundamental and crucial things to daven for. And that's why this became something that all of Klal Yisrael say. So let's see what that is.
Where is
the Zayin Amud Aleph, the sixth wide line.
Middle line.
The middle wide lines. It's the third word on the line. You see Elokai?
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. So Elokai. Nitzor lishoni mera, my Hashem, please protect my mouth from evil. Okay? This already is a most fundamental tefillah. Our mouths are one of the things that run most automatically in our body. Things that roll into the head roll out. And the mouth can be a cause of immense damage. And therefore we're doing our best to control what rolls out of our mouth. And we ask for divine assistance to help us keep things in. And protect my lips from speaking deceit, dishonesty. Now, vilim kalilai nafshi sidoim. Now he takes it to the next level. Not only should I not say bad things, not say offensive things, let me remain silent toward those who curse me. Venafshi ke'ofor lakol tiyeh. Let me just be like dirt to everybody. Meaning that I just don't feel offense, insult, that I just take it and don't respond. Just completely humble myself. So again, this is, as we've discussed last time, this is one of the very fundamental areas of Avoida that grant a person special standing with Hashem. A person is dealt with in a special way if he can live this way. Of nafshi keofola kol tiyeh, let me just not respond to those who insult me and let me just be like dirt to everybody. So we're seeing Mar Brei de Ravina is davening to attain this level. Now, Tosis gives a little bit of a different twist on this, and it's interesting how the Gaon brings it all together. Tosis says, Napshi ke'afola kol tia means something else. Dirt is the most solid and enduring entity on earth. Right? Everything else is busy either decaying, developing, right? Basically, what is life? Life is basically a cycle that begins with conception and ends with complete decomposition, right? It's not birth and then death. It's birth and then going from earth to earth, right? It's just making the circle. Earth endures. Earth goes straight, right? The earth is what it is. There are things growing out of it and things bouncing around it, but earth stays what it is, outlives everything, just keeps going. The same earth is here as was there 1,000 years ago. Same earth. Maybe some people have emerged out of it and sunk back in, but basically it's the same earth. So Taisa says what this tefillah basically is that let me and my offspring be like earth, eternal and enduring and never ending. It's a very interesting twist because it's very different than the way this tefillah is really understood. We understand it as a tefillah of humility, to be able to bear insult, etc. But Tosis is giving this different twist. We'll actually see momentarily that it's really the same thing. We'll see momentarily. But whatever it is, Tosis is saying, let me be like dirt, in the sense of that dirt is everlasting, enduring, outlives everything around. So let me and my offspring be like that. So that's right. Yeah, that's part of it. In the enduring, that's right.
How's supposed to understand the whole?
What's that?
How's supposed to understand the word the whole?
Ah, okay. So Jonathan is asking a good question. The he's not just saying let me be like dirt. He's saying let me be like dirt toward everyone. So if we're saying that the point here is the enduring, it's got nothing to do with other people. Let me just be like dirt and be enduring. So the Gra says, the Gaon says, that actually it's really the same point. He says, by a person negating his ego and moving his own self more and more out of the focus, a person becomes eternal. Because what is it that's temporary about you? As much you as there is, as much ego, right? As much as I consider myself an individual, right? Someone, I'm in the picture. Hey, you're what we said before, a machine of decay, right? On your way down and headed back to the earth. But in as much as you can negate yourself, the more permanent you become. There's more depth here, right? The idea is certainly, what's the point in negating yourself? Don't negate something Hashem created. Hashem created you. What are you negating yourself for? But the point is, no, the other way around. I'm negating my ego, which is really like we saw before. The sa'or shebi isa. What's the sourdough? The Yitzhahar is referred to as sourdough, the yeast. What is the yeast? The yeast bloats the dough. Makes the dough get bloated, much bigger than it really is. It looks much bigger than it is. It looks like there's a lot more there than it is. So too, that's basically what our ego is. Ego is just this foreign thing that's in us. It's Yitzhahar, it's not us. It's bloating us up, making us feel like, you know, who knows what. If you can get rid of that sourdough, boil yourself down just to the basic element, the neshama, in its purity, the neshama really is an eternal thing. So really the Gra says both points come together. By negating your ego, as Rav is asking when he's saying, let me be like dirt, you gain that eternal quality. Okay, so therefore, this is the answer to your question. Because really it is, this tefillah does include both elements. Then he moves on. Pesach libi b'seirasecha, open my heart in your Torah. Means, Mar Beder Avinu was very involved in Torah learning. What he was davening is, again, we're seeing here one of the objectives that our lives are meant to be. We're going to see this brought out soon in the Gemara also. We want the Torah to affect us and shape us, make us into different people. So he's saying, let my heart be affected by your Torah. Open my heart to your Torah. Yes, I'm busy learning the whole time. But there are people who can learn and they stay the same lousy personality they started out as. Not all people, Torah does not automatically, we say that Torah can change a person, but it's not automatic, right? A person has to work in order for the Torah to be able to change him. A person can remain just as bad a person with all the Torah he's learning. So he's davening, Psach libi b'ser asecha, open my heart to your Torah, let my heart be open to the Torah's influence, help it affect me and change me. Now these are things that, this is not an issue of what circumstances you live in and which times you live in, these are the most fundamental things to be davening for. And let me pursue your mitzvahs, meaning here also he's davening to reach a madrega where he longs for the mitzvahs, that's what his obsession in life is, not just that I do the mitzvahs properly, let me feel that the longing to do them, let me turn it into a pursuit, into an obsession. V'tatzileni mipegara, okay, these are just good things for everybody to daven for, save me from bad occurrences. Here it's already a little bit deviates from what we say in the Siddur, okay, obviously it's based on different versions. Mi'etzer hara, v'me'ishara, save me from a bad wife or bad woman. This could be understood in a number of ways. It could be just a bad woman, meaning sometimes a person can get ensnared by seeing the wrong thing at the wrong time. Could be a lot of future spiritual damage. So he's not necessarily referring to his wife. Maybe he's just referring to getting a glimpse of the wrong thing. Or it could be referring to a wife, which is a little difficult to understand because was his wife good or bad? But the truth is that it's like the day that I got married. I was hosted in somebody's house in Toronto. The host told me the day of my wedding, it's a very interesting insight, made a big impact on me. He said that it says in the Gemara that at a certain stage, mezavgin lo adam lifi ma'asav, a person is matched up according to his actions. Meaning, you get the wife you deserve. So he said, don't think that this is a one-time thing, right? When they're going through the catalog of girls, they say, alright, let's see what this guy is holding today, and we'll pick up a girl who has even numbers, who has the same number. No. He said, this is a process that happens daily. Hashem decides what sort of wife you're going to have each day. When your level goes up, the wife will go up. Your level goes down, the wife will go down. That was a very interesting insight. I don't know if... I never actually saw it anywhere, but it's a very interesting idea with a lot of truth to it, and I wonder if that's actually alluded to here. Presumably he was married, and yet he's davening, save me from a bad wife. And from all sorts of other evil misfortunes that come upon the world. Okay, now we get back to the familiar track. All those who are planning evil against me, please nullify their counsel and thwart their thoughts. This is a pasuk. He cites this. May the words of my mouth be pleasing before you as well as the thoughts of my heart. Meaning sometimes we don't have the presence of mind to articulate our needs properly. Sometimes we're so distressed or so stressed that we can't even put it into words. And therefore he's putting in a special tefillah. Hashem, see the thoughts of my heart also. Meaning respond to those as well, even if I don't manage to actually articulate them and put them into words. Okay, now, fine. So that's this field. Now I want to move into the halachic level of this discussion. So first of all, the Poskim note that he said, "Yu l'ratzon imrei fi ve'egin libi l'fanecho Hashem tzuri v'goyali," which is a famous pasuk, after his personal supplication. Or at least that's what it seems in the Gemara, right? Now, if you remember, we learned back in the first perek that it's actually a bona fide takana that a person should conclude Shemana Esrei with the pasuk Yu l'ratzon imrei fi ve'egin libi l'fanecho Hashem tzuri v'goyali, which means that it's really part and parcel of Shemana Esrei. And therefore, some of the Mefarshim say, the Ravid, for example, says that actually this is not meant to be said after your personal tefillah, it's meant to be said immediately when you conclude Shemana Esrei. Amavarech Hasama Yisrael Basholem, you say Yu l'ratzon imrei fi ve'egin libi l'fanecho. So if so, why did he say it at the end? So there are two possible explanations for that. Either He actually didn't say it at the end. The Gemara is just citing this at the end because it finished. Now it finished the list of all the different Amaroyim's personal tefillahs. So when it's finished, the whole thing, it tells you, and all of them said Yulei Ratzon. It's not meant to be understood as this last one's tefillah. All of them also concluded with Yulei Ratzon. But it was actually said right at the end of Shemoneh Esrei before the personal supplications. Or it's possible, this the Bach suggests, that, yes, of course he said Yulei Ratzon right at the end of Shemoneh Esrei. But he also said at the end of his personal tefillah, because it's certainly an apropos pasuk to say. So, one doesn't conflict with the other. The Gemara said in the first parak that when you finish Shemoneh Esrei, you say Yulei Ratzon, and he did that. And then he added his own personal tefillahs, and at the end he said Yulei Ratzon again. So, therefore, Lamaisa, this is the approach of the Ravid, which is adopted by the Shulchan Aruch, that one should say Yulei Ratzon immediately after finishing Sim Shalom. Then you say all the personal things, Elikai Nitzor, and whatever else you want to say. Others say that no. It's exactly as the Gemara put it. He said his personal prayer, and then he said Yulei Ratzon, which is, yes, that Yulei Ratzon we were discussing in the first paragraph. The Yulei Ratzon that you're supposed to say at the end, he said after his personal prayer. Why? Because on the contrary, he wanted to insert his personal prayer into Shemoneh Esrei before he finishes Shemoneh Esrei. Yulei Ratzon marks the end of Shemoneh Esrei, and he wanted to insert this personal supplication in Shemoneh Esrei itself, and there's no problem with doing that. We're discouraged from spending too much time on personal supplications in the middle of a bracha. But on the contrary, here you have the perfect opportunity. You're finished with brachas, but you haven't concluded Shemoneh Esrei because you have not yet said Yulei Ratzon. This is the perfect place to insert supplications. So these differing approaches are actually represented in the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. The Shulchan Aruch rules that a person should say Yulei Ratzon immediately after Sim Shalim and then go on to Elikai Nitzor and whatever else you want to add. The Ramah says, no, no need to do that. It's all part of Shemoneh Esrei. You go straight into Elikai Nitzor and your personal supplications and say Yulei Ratzon all the way at the end. Lamaisa, the Mishnah Berurah suggests, based on the recommendation of other Achronim, to do both, which is what you'll see in many of the Sidurim. Many of the Sidurim have Yulei Ratzon right afterwards and also at the end. I don't know how it works. Well, you're nodding your head, so that indicates that it's like that by the Sfaradim also. Oh, okay. So even though essentially the Sfaradim follow the Shita that you say Yulei Ratzon right at the end, you don't need to say it again later. And Ashkenazim, the Ramah, follows the opinion that you don't say Yulei Ratzon until you're all finished. Lamaisa, the general practice is to actually say both. I'll just add another point, and that is that, okay, let's remember what the whole idea here is. We say Elikai Nitzor, and we explain based on the Charedim why this was chosen as the personal supplication to say, but the point is that it's a personal supplication, and therefore you should make a point of sticking in your own things. Everybody's got their issues. Before Shemoneh Esrei, think for a minute, what are my issues today? People have different issues at different times. You're allowed to tell Hashem about them. That's what tefillah is for. Stick in your own tefillahs also. If you're doing that, you would do it in the course of Elikai Nitzor. Either at the end, but before that last Yulei Ratzon. That last Yulei Ratzon really marks the conclusion of your Shemoneh Esrei. If you want to get lengthy, it's better to do it at the end than a Shemoneh Tefillah. In the middle of the brachas, you can say anything that has to do with that bracha. Shemoneh Tefillah is general, so you can do general things, but shouldn't be too lengthy. If you want to get more lengthy, it should be at the end. I'll just note that the Chassam Sofer and others actually had the practice of saying all these tefillahs. And they said, oh, these are the different Amoraim said different things, we can do all of them. There are some Sidurim that actually print all of them. Yeah. Okay, that's that. So we're finished with the personal supplications at the end of Shemoneh Esrei. But we're still going to continue on different sayings and prayers that different Amoraim used to say at different times. Rav Sheshes, Ki Avi Yosef B'Tanis, when he would fast, Bosa de Matzli Omar Hochi. On a personal fast day, he would say at the end of his Shemoneh Esrei as follows. And this also is brought down in Halacha for a person to say if he is involved, if he does take on a personal fast. Ribbono Olamim, he would conclude as follows. He would say, Master of the World, Golui lefanecha. You know that bizman shebeis hamikdash kayim, that when the beis hamikdash was standing, Adam Chayte, if a person would sin, Makriv Karban, he would make up for it by offering a Karban. And all they would offer was the fat and the blood. And that would atone for him. Now we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, but ve'achshav yoshavti b'tainis, now I have just fasted, ve'nisma'et chelbi v'dami, and through the fast my fat and blood were diminished. So yirotzoy milfanecha, may it please you, she'hechelbi v'dami shenisma'et, that my diminished fat and blood will be kidikavtiv lifanecha al gabei hamizbeach, as though I actually offered it up to you on the mizbeach, v'tirtzeini, and please accept me. Okay, very profound tefillah, which once again is cited by Shulchan Aruch for a person to say when he does fast, a personal fast. Okay. Further. What's that? I don't know, but that's how it's brought down. I don't know. Rabbi Yochanan, ki hava mesayim sifra de Iyov, when Rabbi Yochanan would finish Sefer Iyov, Omar Hochi, he would say as follows. I guess he had his same little drasha for any time he finished Sefer Iyov. A pretty stark drasha. Saif Adam Lavos, man is destined to die. V'saif behema lishchita, and the behema is destined for the slaughtering knife. V'kol lemisa heim oimdim, everybody is headed for death. Meaning, what are you doing in life? Moving steadily towards death. Each moment passed is another one step closer to death. The clock begins as soon as you're born. So, what's his conclusion? What's his point? Ashrei mi shegodal b'Torah, fortunate is the person who grew in Torah, va'amolei b'Torah, and who toils in Torah, ve'oisei nachas ruach liyotzrei, and brings happiness to his creator. Ve'godal b'shem toiv, and fortunate is the man who grew with a good name. We'll explain all these things. Ve'niftar b'shem toiv, and passed on from this world. V'niftar b'shem toiv min ha'olam, and passed on from this world with a good name. Ve'olav omar shleima, and regarding such a person, Shleima said, toiv shem mi shemen toiv, a good name is better than good oil, meaning a good name has further effect than a good perfume. Good perfume might get you, if you really gave a good spritz, maybe it'll get to 5 feet away. But a good name, the aroma spreads around the world. Yoim hamoves mi yoim hivoldoi, and for such a person, the day of death is a more fortunate day than the day of birth. What's Rabbi Yochanan? Rabbi Yochanan is really just trying to get to help us retain the right perspective on life. Think of it as follows. Why did he stick in here that the end of the animal is slaughter? What's that got to do with anything? His point is, utilize your life right. Why is he sticking in the end of the animal is slaughter? So let's imagine something. Let's say a person has a pet cow. He spends his whole life spoiling the cow rotten, feeding him, fattening him, and the cow grows old to a ripe old age, and finally the cow dies after one last belch, after all the food he was fed, nice, fat, I don't know, 700 pounder, a lot of good cuts there. But it's this person's pet cow, and he says, oh no, my cow is not going to grill on anybody's grill. It's going to be buried with full pomp and ceremony. So he buries the cow, and all the 700 pounds of steak start decaying. What would you say if you were witnessing such a phenomenon? I think you would say, what a waste of meat. There's good stuff there. It's just rotting away in the ground. So this is something to think about. What happens if a person spends his entire life grooming, washing, rinsing, and fattening his 180 pounds of flesh. That's what each person is, right? Each of us is whatever it is, be it between, you know, if I want to include myself in this range, between 120 pounds to to 280 pounds, okay? So whatever it is, a pile of meat. Are you going to spend your life just fattening and rinsing and making sure it stays clean? For what? So then it could decay in the ground and provide a little bit more worm food. Isn't that a waste of meat? Well, you're busy washing it and cleansing it. At least let somebody eat it. I dedicate it to the cannibals in New Guinea. Well, what? You're busy cleansing it and washing it and feeding it and fattening it, and then what? Gets inserted into the ground and decays. It's just the same waste as burying a good fat cow. So the question is, what are you? Are you a hunk of meat? Is that what you are? 100 to 200 pounds of meat? Or are you taking into account something else? No, that's not what you are. Soifa Adam Lamus, the Maharal says, man should think of himself as, this is, could be a depressing thought, but if you think of it in the right way, it's not. Man is a dyer. That is man's inherent definition. That's what the Maharal says that he means to say here. A man is a dyer. Meaning, you ever see, there's a game that they play at these kids' birthday parties, pass the package? It's what it is there's a little toy in the middle, depending on who's making the party, I guess that will reflect the quality of the toy, anywhere from a whistle to an electronic game, and it's wrapped with a wrapping, and on top of that is another wrapping, on top of that, it could even have like 50 wrappings, you know, newspapers and whatever it is, wrapping it all up, and it could be like this big, and the idea is you pass it all around, and there's music playing. Sorry, no, this is without the music playing. You just pass it all around, and each person peels off a layer, until finally one person peels off the last layer and he gets the prize. Okay? So, basically, what's it about? It's a big ball there, and it's about peeling off layer after layer after layer until you actually get to the real thing. That's what we were saying before. Man begins his life, again, we're putting this starkly, but for a good purpose. Man begins his life heading for death, right? Man begins his life with a chronic condition called mortality. It's just on the way down from the moment he's born. I know that physically it goes up and down, fine to say that, but I'm saying time-wise, the countdown begins from the moment you're born. Basically, what is it? Man should view himself as that package, right? He's headed, you know, the clock is down, it's one layer after another layer after another layer. That's basically what the body is. The body is meant to be used a little more, wearing it down, until it's no more. And then the question is, what's inside? Is there anything inside? Or did the kid who actually got that last thing just open up the thing and that's it? There's nothing. That's all. You got rid of all the paper and now there's nothing left. So that's the question here. Man is a dyer. Your body is basically going to be worn down until it's no more. And now the question is, so, is that where you begin and end? Or are you going to realize that and utilize that time to do something, make something eternal out of yourself? Therefore he continues, yes, you're busy in life, not grooming the worm food, but rather grooming what's really going to be eternal. You're busy grooming and shaping and developing the neshama. Okay. Margula.
The very end, you explained that a good name is better than
good oil. Meaning than a good perfume. I mean, the point that Shlomo HaMelech is making is that a good name spreads very far.
Did we look at it like when a righteous person had a good life, are we happier than when he was born?
So you're asking a tough question. You're asking actually a tricky question. Ben Yehuda says that inherently, yes. Meaning?
You're only a potential. In your body, you're already achieved.
There you go. Oh, the way Rabbi Yehuda puts it is mamish that way. He says a person is born, who knows what's going to happen. It's not only just a potential, but it could be potentialness. Right?
According
to statistics, yeah. So it's a scary thing. It's a scary thing. So he says, if people would be thinking about it in this perspective, when a person is born, it would be a day of trepidation. Who knows? Is it worthwhile for this person to come into the world? Maybe he's better off staying inside. When a person dies after an accomplished, successful life, he can give a sigh of relief. He can give a sigh of relief. We practice Hilchos Avelus, etc., because at the end of the day, it's for those of us who are left here, it's a loss. And he's also bitzar, but only in a certain way, because he could have accomplished more. Had he been here for another day, he would utilize it well. But at the end of the day, when a person moves on after having accomplished well in his lifetime, whether it was a long life, whether it was a short life, and by the way, long life or short life, this is the Yerushalmi makes this point. Sometimes a person achieves a full, one of the Amiroim was Nifter at the age of 21, Rabbi Bun. 21, one of the Amiroim. Like any of the rest of them. So sometimes a person accomplishes in a short time what it takes other people to accomplish in 100 years. Now this is not only said to, this has to take this into account not only for a person who dies, Yom Rachmana Litzlan, but for a person who starts old also. Sometimes a person becomes a Baal Tshuva at a later stage in life and feels like, oh, what a wasted 50 years. No! Hashem decided, for His Cheshbonus, He wants to give you a short life because you can accomplish a lot in a short life. Short relatively. Just, He wanted that life to begin at the age of 40. Okay. But that's basically, it's all the same idea. And when a person did utilize his life properly, then Melech is putting it very straight. There was a person who, a bachur, now he's an old man, who was in Bnei Brak, is a bachur from Chutz La'aretz, was in Bnei Brak when the Chazon Ish died. And he attended the Levaya. The Levaya was very, it was a blow to Yiddishkeit. We're talking about the greatest man in the generation, well, a giant stature, out of proportion for his generation. And the feeling at that point was, this is the way the Gedolim of the time expressed it, it's a different world now. The world with the Chazon Ish, the world without a Chazon Ish, it's two different worlds. So this boy was at the Levaya. It was a very intense day, a very draining day emotionally, and he never really experienced anything like it. And finally the Chazon Ish was buried and he's heading back into, everybody's kind of making their way back and the atmosphere is morose, and he comes back into Bnei Brak and he was a yeshiva boy and he kind of wandered into the shul, sat down, he said he opened the sefer and was having a very hard time concentrating. He was kind of looking at the words. He was the only one in the shul. He was having a hard time doing anything with the sefer. He said, and then the door to the shul burst open, and a middle-aged man came in, also looking very agitated. And he said, like he was looking around, looked very disoriented and agitated. And then he saw him, and he came over to him, and he said, "Bachro, you know that the Chazon Ish died?" So he looked up at him, and he said, "Yeah." He said, "Basically, we just said, it's a different world." A world without the Chazon Ish is a different world. He said, the Chazon Ish was a lion. You and I are dogs. What can we do? You know, what can we do in comparison to the Chazon Ish? But then this bachur is sitting there, you know, is looking at this man, suddenly giving this whole diatribe, and suddenly grabbed him by the shoulders and he said, "But Shlomo HaMelech says," this man caught him by the shoulders, shook him, and said, "But Shlomo HaMelech said a live dog is better than a dead lion." He said, "So right now we're in a better position than the Chazon Ish, because the two of us are alive and he's dead. But we realize that that's only because you can make use of the opportunity. So come, let's sit down and learn some together. I'm not going to be able to concentrate on my own right now. Let's sit down and learn some together." They sat down, they opened up whatever it was that they learned. They spent about half an hour learning, and this man, this funny man, got up to leave. So the Bacha said to him, "What's your name?" "My name is Shach." That was the story. I guess this bacher chapped the significance of this story much later in life.
What does Shach mean?
Rav Shach. It was Rav Shach. Okay. Fine. We'll move on. Margila before Meir Meir. Rav Meir used to say the following. This was his phrase. Gemor becholavavcha. This is as though Hashem talking to the person. Meaning he walked around with these words resonating in his ears, as though he's hearing Hashem telling him this. This basically sums up what it's all about. And he would say this to his Talmidim also, as though Hashem is speaking. Gemor becholavavcha, resolve with all of your heart, with v'chol nafshecha, and with all of your soul. Meaning, v'chol levavcha, v'chol nafshecha means turn that into your soul obsession in life, and sacrifice everything for it. Lo da'as es d'rochoy, to know my ways, Hashem says, v'lishkoid al dalsei Torosi, and to sit diligently by the doors of my Torah. The Torah is called doors, the Gaon says, because anything you learn in Torah is really opening a door into a whole deeper realm. Nitzar Torosi belimcha, keep your, my Torah in your heart. Veneged einecha tiyeh yirasi, and let my fear, meaning let my awareness, be always opposite your eyes. Meaning live with a sensory awareness of me. Shmar picha mikol chet, guard your mouth from all sins. You keep seeing again and again when we're talking about Averis, the mouth is most emphasized, because the mouth is the source of wholesale Averis. You have to watch your arms, legs, and other body parts from Averis also. Don't sin with your nose and don't sin with your ears. But the rest of the limbs, it's retail. You can only do one Avera at a time. The mouth, it's wholesale. You can do tons quickly. So that's why the mouth is always emphasized. Guard your mouth from Averis. V'taher v'kadesh atzmecha mikol hashmo v'ovoin, and purify and sanctify yourself from any fault or sin. Nothing to it. It's all you got to do. V'ani eyeh imcha b'chol mokoim, and then I'll be with you everywhere. That's all it takes. Always be diligently involved in Torah learning. Turn it into an obsession. Sacrifice everything for it. Live with that sensory awareness of Hashem. Guard your mouth from evil. Purify and sanctify yourself. That's all it takes. And then I'll be with you everywhere. You'll feel my presence with you and my assistance with you. By the way, purify and sanctify yourself from any sin is significant. It's not just linguistic. Don't sin means don't sin. That doesn't mean a person cannot sin and also not purify and sanctify himself. Purify and sanctify each of their own connotations. To purify yourself from sin means get rid of the roots of sin. Meaning a person might be under the control of, let's say, his taiva for eating. This is a man who responds to food. It's like common in Western countries, right? You eat when you see food. It's not, you're never hungry, and because you never go for too long without seeing food. And when you see food, you respond by eating, right? So my father used to say when he came from Israel back in the 50s, it wasn't like that. When he moved to America, he said, you know, it always made him crazy. He said, by you kids, hungry means I'm bored. Right? So a person is controlled by, meaning it's impossible to be in the house, see a piece of chocolate cake on the table, and that this piece of chocolate cake should still survive. If it's there, I'm going to eat it. Right? So a person is controlled by his urge for food. Now, does that necessarily mean he's going to be doing Averis? No. There's plenty of kosher food in the house, and there are plenty of kosher food joints. And a person can be controlled by food and not do Averis. But yet, there is a root there that can cause problems. For example, what happens if he suddenly finds himself at a simcha where he discovers that the kashrus is questionable? And if he wasn't right now faced by food, his better judgment would say, don't eat here. But he's sitting at the table, and the prime rib is sizzling, and the molecules are bombarding his nostrils. and he's still controlled by his urge. So, questionable. Questionable doesn't mean it's wrong. It means it's a question. Question could be yes, could be not. It's probably yes. The steak seems to think so also. He digs in. So therefore, the fact that you're controlled by your taiva for food might not necessarily be sin, but it's a potential cause for sin. To purify yourself means to get rid of those potential roots, meaning to reach a situation where I am not controlled by any urge. I eat when I decide to eat. Right? It's a conscientious decision. When I decide to eat, if there's no food around, I'll go find food. And when I don't decide to eat, there can be all kinds of food around and I'm not going to eat. The only way to do that is by exercising the self-control and telling yourself no when there is kosher food and it's perfectly fine. But if you're not going to exercise telling yourself no, it's going to be very hard to do it when you need to. So to purify yourself means to get rid of the roots of the roots of potential sin. Even though you can generally count on going through life without messing up. To sanctify yourself, Kedusha, means Kadesh Atzmucha B'Mutar Lecha, which is a similar idea but different. It's to make fences for yourself. I mean, this is already something else. This is not, what we're saying before is more inherent changes of personality, trying to uproot tendencies, to overcome tendencies, etc. Here we're talking about making fences, meaning, for example, I know that on that street I'm likely to see things that I shouldn't be seeing. So I won't say I'll walk down the street and I'll work hard not to look. No, I'll take a detour and I'll go the other way. I'll take a side street. Kadesh Atzmucha means to come up with means to avoid things that are mutter in order not to get too close to the issue. Similar concepts but different. In the first case, the tara means, to purify yourself means to work against the tendencies, the inherent tendencies that you have. Kadesh Atzmecha, the concept of precious, is more an issue of technical, making technical fences. I'm going to avoid this so as not to get too close to what's beyond it. So that's what he's saying. Again, you want to really get close to Hashem, you want to really become a Kaddish, you want to be in a situation where the Shekhinah is with you in all places. It's not just enough to work on avoiding sin, but you have to work at ensuring, you have to get insurance against sin. Insurance against sin means working against the tendencies that lead you to sin, and also implementing your own measures, similar to what Chazal did. They made Gedarim to keep us away from getting too close to the edge. You make your own Gedarim in your personal life. You see that there are certain cliffs in your life that you need to make your own fences for. That turns you into a kaddish. Okay. So again, this in Reb Meir, according, in Reb Meir's perspective, this is in a nutshell what it's all about. Margile befumayu derabbanan de Yavne. The Chachamim of Yavne used to say, "Ani beria vechaveri beria." I am a creation and my fellow is a creation. Now here what they're doing is contrasting the Talmid Chacham to the Am Haaretz. And this is very interesting. Now, the truth is that he's talking about two extremes. There's a Talmid Chacham who's completely engaged in Torah, and the Am Haaretz who, hear people say, I'm not cut out for it, and therefore he doesn't learn at all. So we're saying, this person might feel, well, you know, I have a good life in business and having fun and everything, but as far as Judaism goes, I'm kind of like a freak occurrence. You know, like, I wasn't really cut out for the main purposes of Judaism. So therefore, they're already precluding that by saying, I'm a creation and he's a creation. Meaning every person is a very specifically designed creation with all of your capabilities, etc., etc. These were custom made and envisioned and pre-planned by Hashem. Nobody is a collection of capabilities just haphazard because that's how he came out, because of a random combination of genes. I am a person, and when you see a person who looks like a complete failure, you should know that is a very specific, custom-made creature for a specific purpose which he might not be realizing. Ani malachti be'ir, v'u malachti basada. This is really a way of saying, I do my work in the Bismedrash, he does his work outside. Meaning, as follows. My life is in the Bismedrash, his is outside. Now, you have people, like we said before, these are two extremes. You have people who are in both places, which is the ideal. But here, we're talking about the phenomenon of the extreme. The one who says, learning is not up my alley, and therefore I don't do it. It's not for me. I'm not the type. Now, ani mashkim l'mlachti, v'hu mashkim l'mlachti. I arise early for my work, and he arises early for his work. We're both energetic people. Kishem shehu einu misgada b'mlachti, kach ani einu misgada b'mlachti. And neither of us has anything to do with the other's territory. Meaning, we don't cross paths, because he completely keeps away from the mispedrash. He's not cut out for it, and that's that. Now, v'shema toimah, so you might say, well look, the guy's justified. Ani marbe v'hu mamit. Because look, I'm able to accomplish a lot in learning. And if he were to try to learn, he'd barely accomplish anything because he's got a thick head. He's slow. He's not the type. No, that's wrong. Shaninu, we learned in the Mishnah, Echad hamarbe ve'echad hamamit ubilvad sheyechaven liboy lashamayim. It makes no difference whether one accomplishes a lot or a little in terms of material. As long as a person is truly dedicated to Hashem and making efforts because of his dedicated to Hashem, it's all the same thing. So basically what's being stated here is as follows. This notion of a person who is not cut out for the Bismedrash is wrong. Everybody should be in the Bismedrash. A person should not say, well, I can't really accomplish anyways, and I'm not the Kollel type, or whatever it is, so therefore my place is not in the Bismedrash. No. Most of Klal Yisrael are not the Kollel type, and yet there's so much you can be doing there. Yes. Work, you're out there in the field, but be in the Bismedrash too. And, what, you only accomplish a little bit? That's fine. The point is, how much effort are you putting in? Are you dedicating yourself? Okay, so this admonition, by definition, is not really relevant to anybody who's sitting here. But at the same time, we can take it as an encouragement to realize that the point is not what do you see you're achieving. The point is, are you dedicated? That's all. As Rabbi Avigdor Miller always used to push that issue of consistency. He used to have a shiur before Shacharis on Shabbos. He had very interesting scheduled shiur. There were daily shiur, there were weekly shiur, there were weekly shiur at different times. There was a shiur that he had for about 25 minutes before Shacharis on Shabbos. A Gemara shiur. How much are you going to accomplish, you know, in a Gemara shiur? 20 Huslan long Masechtas. And I remember in the first, like, I don't know how many years of my life, it was always Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin was like a part of the announcement after davening. Sanhedrin shir at 8, and the Shacharis is at 8:30. That was like my whole life, I was hearing that, at least for the first decade of my life. And then they finished Sanhedrin, and they started Pesachim. And I remember that the Rav announced, he said, you would think, yeah, each Shabbos we come and we do a couple of lines. But look, the people who have made the effort of getting up a little earlier, and after, I think he said 25 years, they've completed the Masechta. Yes, a little bit, and a little bit, and a little bit. Okay, we'll end here.